Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is September the 16th, 2016. The calendar keeps right on chugging along, Election Day looming large on the horizon, and the madness of the campaign doesn't seem to let up, does it? I thank you for joining me. Always great to catch up with you at the end of the week. Hope you all had a great week out there and in the dwindling days of summer, although you wouldn't know it with the weather forecast here in New York City. Warm, sunny skies, beautiful weather. Hope that your world has been sunny as well. Those of you who are familiar with me know the routine. I'm a former immigration special agent, spent 30 years with the INS, the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And ever since the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001, witnessing those ashes from the conflagration at Ground Zero landing on my neighborhood, landing on me and my family, I've been determined to wake up our fellow Americans and to try to wake our politicians from their deep slumber and understand the true nature of our borders, our immigration laws, and how they are a vital component of national security. That's something the 9/11 Commission made very clear. And again, if you're familiar with my work, you know I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission, as well as numerous hearings on Capitol Hill before the House and Senate. I've been around the country testifying before state legislative bodies. Most recently, just a couple of weeks ago, I went to Indianapolis, where Senator Mike Delf, who chairs the Immigration Committee on the state level, was kind enough to give me the leadoff position in the batting lineup, so to speak, and they gave me over an hour. There will be a link to that hearing posted, a video of that hearing, and as soon as it's available, you'll be able to find it in the articles that I write, because I do plan to write about my experiences in Indiana, the great work of Mike Delf and some other folks out there, certainly the hospitality they showed me. But the point of the matter is that Indiana is not what the politicians, the pundits, and the pollsters, you know, the triple Ps, the politicians, pollsters, would have you believe that somehow it's not a border state, you know, because they only talk about those four border states, which, of course, again, if you're familiar with me, you know, I keep making the point we are a nation of 50 border states. And so I was given this opportunity to testify before the state Senate, along with other witnesses, about the impact of immigration, sanctuary cities, a host of issues. I was very pleased to be given that opportunity, and I thank Mike Delf and his staff. You know, this is something that we need to do. We need to wake up our politicians. You cannot defend America when you have millions of people from other countries wandering around towns and cities clear across the country. And that's not a statement of xenophobia. And it certainly doesn't earn you a place in Hillary Clinton's, what did she call it, her basket of deplorables. That statement, the philosophy that underlines it, is what is truly deplorable. Again, if you're familiar, you know the websites. If you're not familiar, grab a pen, take it down. I'd like you to go visit the following websites, because this is where I write. This is where you can have a good, hard look at the materials that really, I hope, will be eye-opening, not only for you, but for your friends, your neighbors, anyone you can forward it to. We need to create what I've come to call my bucket brigade of truth, because the mainstream media is willfully obfuscating the issue and blocking information that Americans must have. My own personal website, of course I put that at the top of the list, is Michael Cutler, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I also write for Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. Located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great place to visit, especially in the wintertime. I know, I've been there. Great folks, great website. You should visit it. I also write for Front Page Magazine, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. David and his people do an incredible job. And here's the interesting thing. He's a staunch conservative. I'm a middle-of-the-road kind of Democrat from Brooklyn. And he and I, and conservatives and I, may not always agree. But you see, that's what America is supposed to be about. Where we have our disagreements, where we have our discussions, that's what the First Amendment is about. What we are witnessing on college campuses today, these so-called safe areas, should scare the hell out of everybody. The Holocaust started with book burnings. You have to stop the opposing viewpoint because then you can't dominate. When you're pushing a bad position, you eliminate the competition, not by defeating them in an open forum, not by beating them in debate or discussion, but simply, you know, sticking a sock in their mouths and shutting them up or intimidating them. This is willful. This is the tactic. It's a tactic that certainly began with Jimmy Carter. We'll talk more about that at some point. And you may have some real surprises coming your way when you find out about Mr. Carter. But we will probably save that for next week. So as they used to say on the old TV series on TV, tune in next week. And have I got a story to tell you about Jimmy Carter? But he started a lot of this madness, and with certain craftiness about him, as only a slimy politician could. But in any event, this is about shutting down debate and discourse because the opponents of border security and effective immigration law enforcement know that the facts are not on their side, know that common sense is not on their side, know that the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission convened after the attacks of 9/11 to figure out what went wrong to prevent it from happening in the future. Their position is opposed by the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. And they also know that morality is not on their side. And we'll get into that morality issue in just a couple of minutes. I also write for The Social Contract. So there you have the three websites, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract. Or you can just go to my website, michaelcutler.net, click on that website, and you will see the links to the articles that I've been writing over the years. I almost feel like Paul Revere, except I don't have saddle sores, you know. But I've been out there on the road, whether it's flying, driving, trying to get the message out. America's first line of defense and America's last line of defense are its borders and its immigration laws. And then we come to Hillary Clinton. And I have to tell you, every time I think I'd heard it all and seen it all, she comes along and lobs another grenade our way, verbally speaking, of course. The idea that if you support Donald Trump, you are likely a candidate for her basket of deplorables. What exactly is it that Donald Trump said that was so terrible? That he wants to secure our borders to make certain that criminals and drug dealers and terrorists and narcotics don't flow across our border, to make certain that Americans stop losing their jobs, their livelihoods, and their futures to foreign workers who are displacing Americans hand over fist. That's what he talked about. And yes, I know he sometimes goes off on tangents, and it drives me crazy also, but the underlying message makes perfect sense. Hillary Clinton has made it clear. And go to her website. You can see it. If she's elected president within the first 100 days, her number one goal is to legalize unknown millions of illegal aliens in the United States. And it may sound okay to you because what they have done, what she has done, what Obama has done, what the open borders anarchists have done, what Republican globalists have done. See, we're getting hammered from both directions. And if you wonder why the mainstream media doesn't cover the issue the way they should, because they are walking to the bank. Well, actually, they can't even walk to the bank. They're crawling to the bank with all the money that the corporations are making by screwing Americans out of their jobs and out of their wages. If you thought that the bank fiasco of 08 was a major robbery, this is a bigger robbery, because Americans are also losing their lives. And that's not to say that people who come here are all criminals and all want to kill us. Not at all. But let's have some perspective. On September 11, 2001, 19 young men barely out of their teens inflicted more casualties on the United States than did the entire Japanese fleet on December 7, 1941 at Pearl Harbor. You know, right after 9/11, we kept hearing this mantra. We've got to be right 100% of the time. The terrorists only got to get it right once. Every time that a terrorist has an opportunity to enter the United States, there is that one time that the terrorists could be getting it right. Now, the immigration system is flawed. Every system is flawed. People get away with speeding all the time. People get away with drunk driving all the time. People get away with selling drugs and don't get caught. But yet, when you talk about immigration, the first thing you hear from the globalists, whether it was John Boehner, whether it was Barack Obama, it's both sides of the aisle, we can't deport 11 million. And by the way, the number's probably closer to 30 million. Reagan's amnesty was supposed to involve 1 million. We wind up with nearly 4 million. If the same thing happens now, look out. We can't deport, use their number, 11 million. So we have to deal with the fact they're here and accept the idea that they're here and simply figure out whether we should give them citizenship or quote-unquote only lawful status so they can work in the United States. Is that really the choice? Is that really the choice? Because you can't arrest every illegal alien. Arrest none of them? All or nothing? Is this a binary system, like a switch? It's on or it's off? Think about this, folks. What law gets enforced 100% of the time? Other than the laws of nature. Because the laws of nature are immutable. I was originally a science major, and that's why I was, because I love the laws of nature. You can't, you know, they used to have this commercial, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. Well, you can't screw with Mother Nature, because Mother Nature's laws are immutable. The speed of light is not determined by a guy with a badge, a radar gun, and a summons book, okay? But our speed laws are meaningless if they're not enforced. All of our laws are meaningless if they're not enforced. And so the members of Congress who want to do everything they can to spend as much taxpayer money as possible on ineffective programs that they know are going to be ineffective are doing it to create the Magic Act, this, you know, Potemkin Village, this kabuki theater that, oh, we're doing everything we can and we're spending the money because we're on your side. And meanwhile, they're sticking a knife in our back, metaphorically speaking, of course. How are they sticking a knife in our back? By making certain that no matter what happens, the flood of foreign workers continues unabated, the flood of foreign tourists continues unabated, and the flood of foreign students continues unabated. That's the goal. The goal is not to enforce the law. So they tell us, well, if we can't deport everybody, let's deport nobody. By that standard, we should have no law enforcement in the United States. If you can't stop all the speeders, stop enforcing the speed law. If you can't get rid of the drunk drivers, give it up. If you can't get rid of people that are texting and driving, stop bothering people. After all, it's not fair just to catch a few if you don't catch them all. That's the reasoning we've been hearing now for how many years? That we can't catch them all, so let's not deport any. And what has this done? Well, back in 2013, when I testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee, I said that those statements and the policies, particularly of the current administration, have in essence fired the starter's pistol for aspiring illegal aliens from around the world. And for these folks, they know the finish line is the border of the United States. Because once they get past the border, they're home free, and the Republicans have no greater desire to arrest and deport them than do the Democrats. And that, I believe, is why Donald Trump is so hated by the mainstream Republicans. Oh, my God, this guy is selling us out. He's standing with the Americans, and he's screwing the people that are lining our pockets with campaign contributions. How dare he? How dare he? Who does Trump think he is? And that, I believe, is a big part of why Mitt Romney and the mainstream Republicans had a cow when Trump won the primary. What do we do now? The game is over. The game is over because if this guy wins the election, the globalists in America are sunk. Think what happened in Europe with Great Britain and Brexit. All the tales of woe we heard from those lying economists, so-called, on TV. Oh, my God, if Britain pulls out of the European Union, the sun won't rise, we'll have floods and earthquakes. God knows an asteroid may hit the earth, all because Great Britain said enough. We want to control who comes into our country. We want to have sovereign borders. Oh, my God, how dare they? So the Brits went to the polls, and Brexit was passed. and the sun rose the next day. There was no asteroid. There were no earthquakes or volcanoes, and life goes on. And life goes on. This push for globalism is simply a grab for wealth and a way of destroying middle-class wages. That's what it's about. It's nothing less, nothing more. It is rampant greed by people who are worth gazillions of dollars. You know, when you stop and think about it, if some poor guy went into a grocery store and stole a dozen eggs, a loaf of bread, and a container of milk and tried to make his way out the door, and if I was a police officer, I would be compelled to not only not arrest that guy, but I'd buy his groceries, maybe throw a couple of other items into that bag of his, and tell him where he needs to go to get some kind of assistance so that he can eat a decent meal. That's a desperate guy. But the Greenspans, the Zuckerbergs, the Bill Gates out there, these people are billionaires. They sprinkle houses around the globe, okay, the way you would sprinkle, you know, grass seeds on your lawn. We have some here, we have some there, we have one there. They fly around the world in private jets. We get corporate jets. And those jet planes very often make Air Force One look like a cattle car by comparison. And they're the ones that are pushing for globalism so they can make still more money. When you have a dozen mansions, obviously what you need more than anything in the world is a 13th mansion. And when you have a 757, obviously what you really need is a 747 or maybe an A380. This is madness. They are in a feeding frenzy, and they're eating our future, and they're eating the future of our children. And it's a documentable fact as to what's going on. And if you listen to the talk shows this weekend, and I don't care what channel you twist the dial to, it's all going to be the same. If only we would pass comprehensive reform, the economy would take off. The economy would take off and head for the stratosphere. Yeah, it would leave the stratosphere and keep on trucking out of the solar system. Because understand something. If we legalized millions of illegal aliens and gave them employment authorization, first of all, because of Obamacare, they're not covered by Obamacare. That's the way it's written. Newly legalized aliens are not covered. So what does that mean? Well, if you hire an American worker or a lawful immigrant worker, the employer has a choice. Pay for health insurance for the employee or pay a $3,000 fine because you didn't provide health care. So let's say they opt the cheapest route, which is the $3,000 fine. Even if they pay that newly legalized alien the same as an American worker, they save a minimum of $3,000 a year because they don't have to shell out the $3,000 because of Obamacare. Here's the other point. By dumping that many more millions of foreign workers into the overflowing labor pool of 95 million Americans who can't even find work, they've given up looking, they're of working age and they're toast, we will drive wages down still further because labor is not unlike any other commodity. If you flood the market with a commodity, you drive down the value of the commodity. The De Beers Company, famed for diamonds out of Belgium, is very careful about how many gem quality or gemstone quality diamonds they put on the market any one year. Why? Because if they flood the market with diamonds, the price of diamonds would drop. You could probably get a diamond for the price of cut glass. How do they keep it from happening? They tightly control the supply of diamonds that are put into the marketplace any given year. In economics, the term dumping is used to describe criminal activity where someone who has control over a commodity dumps that commodity into the market to intentionally drive down the price of that commodity. Folks, the commodity here is labor. They're driving down labor costs. And how are they doing it? By dumping millions of foreign workers into the labor pool. And these are folks who come from countries that earn less money. So if some guy comes here from India, and they, by the way, got the lion's share of the remittances wired back home by their workers, not just from America, but all over the world, I believe the figure was $70 billion, and their economy did take off because of all that infusion of cash that came from America and elsewhere. But a computer programmer in India would likely be very happy to make $50,000 for a job that an American would expect to make $130,000 or $140,000 a year. Now, you might say to yourself, why should we spend all that extra money on an American? And if you believe that's the case, then you are a globalist and you don't understand how capitalism is supposed to work. We are supposed to reward people who work hard and have a talent. That's how it's supposed to work. And the folks that talk about free market, it would work if it was a sealed system. If you could not bring in any foreign workers, there's a certain number of programmers, a certain number of engineers and biochemists. And so what happens is the prices would rise as the demand for those professionals increase. And that creates incentives for people to spend all that money on college education. And that also means that instead of earning money, they're sitting in a classroom learning so that they can be programmers, scientists, engineers, STEM employees, science, technology, engineering, math. So not only are they spending a boatload of money on their degree, but they're also not working. Whereas the kid that gets out of high school and says, I'm going to be a sanitation worker, and there's nothing wrong with that. God help us if we didn't have them. It's a tough, back-breaking, filthy job, and I wouldn't want to do it, and they should be paid decently and treated respectfully. But certainly they're not going to earn what a guy with an MBA is going to earn, you would think. You would think. And think about this. The guy that becomes a sanitation worker fresh out of high school doesn't owe any student loans and starts working at age 18, whereas the guy that goes to college may not start earning money until he or she is in his early 20s. So no income coming in for 6 years, let's say, and now they're running up a student loan. And you may not know this, but the second greatest form of personal indebtedness in the United States today are student loan debts. Now, what are these kids getting for that student loan debt and all that hard work that they put into studying if they can't get a job when they get a degree? And there are many, many, many Americans in that little situation right now. And just last week, Dell Computers laid off another 3,000 Americans. A couple of months ago, HP fired 20,000 Americans. Disney laid off 800 American programmers. But it wasn't that they didn't have work for them, because they were ordered, the employees, the Americans who had worked for Disney, for example, for years, were ordered to train their replacements if they wanted their severance package. You don't train your replacement, thank you, you're not getting anything from us. You stay around, you train your replacement, we'll give you your severance package. That's not what free market is. This is putting a gun to the head of American workers. This is willfully dropping the wages of American workers. And in fact, Alan Greenspan talked about it when he testified for Chuck Schumer. And by the way, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but when Hillary had her whatever it was that she had, that medical emergency, standing next to her just before she had to be hauled off to her daughter's house to recuperate from pneumonia, it was Chuck Schumer who was standing next to Hillary Clinton. They marched lockstep with one another. And remember, Chuck Schumer was the ringleader of the Gang of Eight, Comprehensive Reform. So he has a hearing on April 30th, 2009. I know I've read this before. If you've heard this before, forgive the repetition, but it's worth repeating. And I want our new friends who are hopefully tuning in, to hear this. Because first, Greenspan talked about how he knows that the American people, it doesn't sit well with Americans that we would reward people who are here illegally, but illegal aliens are a flexible workforce and they only minimally suppress wages. If you're at the bottom rung of the economic ladder and you lose 25 cents an hour, that loss of money is enough to keep you awake at night. And, of course, Greenspan has a mansion out on the Hamptons, multi-million-dollar estate. So I'm sure that if he lost 25 cents an hour, he wouldn't notice it. But the guy who mows his lawn most certainly would. That's this duplicitous, double-standard hypocrisy that we keep hearing from the open borders anarchists. Oh, it's a minimal suppression of wages. Right. Wink, wink. But he wasn't done there, because then he went after the high-tech workers, or what we call in the immigration laws, the highly skilled. And he talked about how Bill Gates wanted to have basically an unlimited supply of H-1B visas. Now, here's what's interesting that you may not know about Bill Gates. The Gates Foundation and the Clinton Foundation partnered back in 2013, reportedly to look out for the best interests of girls and women around the world. I wonder whatever happened to girls and women in the United States. I wonder what happened to boys and men in the United States. Again, the push for globalism. There's Hillary Clinton talking about the very wealthy, and who is she chummy with? The wealthiest man, Bill Gates, who has been hammering Congress and hammering Congress and hammering Congress and saying, more H-1Bs, more H-1Bs, more H-1Bs. Very remarkable. And I remember a hearing that he did, and I've done a bunch of hearings, and I've never seen this before. While he is testifying before a committee hearing, the chairman of the committee said to him words to the effect of, well, Mr. Gates, I know this has been a long hearing. Would you mind sticking around with us a little bit longer if you have the time? I almost fell out of my chair. I have never heard that before. But it makes sense. Why does it make sense? Because Bill Gates is their employer. Not the way that citizens are the employers of the politicians, which is what the Constitution says. But because when you look at the campaign contributions, when you look at the Gates Foundation and all this other nonsense, that is where the politicians are getting their bread buttered. So please stick around, Mr. Gates. I mean, listen, this whole setup that we're dealing with in Congress today is infuriating beyond words. It's infuriating beyond words. Yes, Gates was there as an expert, and yes, they did take him to task when they alleged that he was engaged in price fixing and all that other business, but it's all kangaroo court. It's all theater. It's all theater. It's all done to create illusions. This is the biggest magic act in the world. Understand what we're dealing with here, folks. That's why we are in such trouble. And you won't hear that in the mainstream media. You know, after 9/11, I was averaging 15 television interviews per month, going from one network to the other network, back to the first network, over to another one. I was bouncing around like a ping pong ball. Most of the time when they sent the car for me, I was on my way home, I'd get a call, and I'd have the car turn around and bring me to another studio. Take me to CNN, take me to Fox, take me to MSNBC, take me over to ABC, bouncing around. I don't do that anymore. They don't call anymore, and it's fine. After hundreds of appearances on TV, I'm tired of looking at my face on television, maybe more than you are. But what disturbs me is you don't see any other former immigration agents on TV either. When the story that they're covering deals with a medical issue, they bring in the doctors, they bring in the oncologists, they bring in the neurosurgeons and the biochemists. When the story is about a space probe that was flown to Jupiter, and in fact, we now have a satellite orbiting Jupiter, which is an incredible achievement, especially since at that distance it's powered by solar panels, not by nuclear power. That's a first. And if you saw the images at the Jet Propulsion Laboratories, I didn't see anybody from India. These were Americans, Americans. You know, the dumb Americans who can't do the work if we don't import all the foreign workers. These were the Americans. And when they talk about it, who do they bring in? People from Jet Propulsion Laboratories, JPL, they bring in astronauts and astronomers. When the story is about the military, they bring in former generals and admirals and Navy SEALs. If there's a kidnapping, they bring in a detective or an FBI profiler, right? We've seen it. But when the story is about immigration, the closest you get to law enforcement is a border sheriff from Arizona. Why? Because that feeds this nonsense, this fabrication, that all we've got to do is secure the Mexican border and the sun shines tomorrow. It's a lie. It's a lie. If we had the deflector shield from the Starship Enterprise securing the Mexican border for the last 30 years, let me tell you something, 9/11 would have played out exactly the same. Not one thing would have been different. The terror attack at San Bernardino would have played out exactly the same way. And the Tsarnaev brothers would have gone on their murderous rampage in Boston at the marathon the same way, because none of these aliens came anywhere near the Mexican border. I wrote an article for Front Page magazine last year. I called it Border Security and the Immigration Colander. the idea that if we partially plug, and believe me, it's only partially if you read the law, oh my God, what a duplicitous, backstabbing piece of legislation that doozy was. If we plug one hole in the bottom of the colander that you use to drain pasta, magically, that colander has now become a watertight bucket with only plugging one hole. It's insane. It doesn't work that way. It's a fantasy. We're told we have a shortage of computer programmers, and meanwhile, every other week you pick up a trade magazine and you find out what company just fired how many more thousands of Americans who've been doing the job quite well with proficiency and talent and dedication for decades. If there's a shortage of programmers, why are you firing your programmers? Because then they run to Congress, they make their campaign contributions, and they demand more H-1B visas. Ted Cruz wanted to have a 500% increase in the number of H-1B visas. How wonderful for us. Understand what we're doing. We are destroying the middle class. So we get to Alan Greenspan when he testifies for Schumer, and this is why he said we need to bring in more H-1B visas. These are the two benefits. If you think these are benefits, you have my sympathy. Get mental health. He says this, first, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will, of necessity, move into vacant housing units. Isn't that a delightful way to describe an American home lost to foreclosure? Why do you think that the housing unit is vacant? Because the prior occupant was an American programmer who got fired and can no longer afford the mortgage. That family went from middle-class tax-paying status to living below the poverty line, depending on costly safety net programs, and they lost their home, and they no longer have disposable income, which is why the economy is in the toilet, because nobody has the money to spend on anything. How do you have money to spend when you lose your job? And then you listen to some elitists on TV. You have the one choice or the other, you know, the left or the elitist globalists, and they actually are all elitist globalists at this point. Oh, those lazy Americans on disability. Yeah, the number of Americans who've gone to disability is something like tripled under Obama. Are you going to tell me that millions of Americans who worked for decades woke up lazy one morning? Hell no, they woke up unemployed, and they had no choice. And the best option was to take disability if they could. And at the end of the day, people should do what's in their own best interest. And if Americans did what was in their own best interest, they'd fire 90% of our elected representatives because we're not being represented by those thieves. But let me get back to Greenspan, this genius, this moral whatever. So let me repeat this. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will of necessity move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. And, of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. Boy, there's a run-on sentence. What contributed substantially to the disabling of the banking system were the subprime mortgages that Mr. Greenspan engineered. They wrote an article about it because 2 years earlier he stood before the Federal Reserve as the chairman and bragged about how with technology they were able to provide credit to people who normally wouldn't qualify for credit. That's how we got into that downward spiral, engineered by Greenspan and his buddies. And then he has the chutzpah to stand there before the Senate and say, oh, well, those mortgage-backed securities, you know, they kind of dropped in price. Sure, because you tampered with the banking system and you made sure to get rid of lots of American workers so they couldn't pay their mortgages, and that's why we are in a vicious downward spiral. You know, when you're going the wrong way on a one-way street, you don't hit the gas, you hit the brake, don't you think? But then he says this, greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled, quotas meaning foreign workers, greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of the skilled over the lesser skilled. What's a wage premium? Salaries. If we cut their salaries, they wouldn't have this money over what the guy with no education is earning. In other words, let's make sure that the guy with the MBA doesn't make significantly more than the guy that dropped out of high school. This is a prescription for the destruction of the middle class, and it's with purpose. This isn't an accident. He's not denying it. He's obfuscating it with the smokescreen of blather. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled with lower wage premiums of the skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism, and in the process, you're going to love this term, we have created a privileged elite. We're talking about middle-class workers, folks, privileged elite, whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. So what is Mr. Greenspan saying? If we could open the floodgates with those H-1B visas, we could make those people compete with Americans, and Americans would have a choice. Accept much, much, much lower wages or get out of their professions. And that's exactly what's happening. And tomorrow on the TV shows, you can pick any channel you want, spin the dial, and you see these idiots scratching their head, the dandruff is flying. Unemployment is only at 5%, and yet the economy is still not going anywhere. It's 5% if you ignore 95 million unemployed Americans of working age. 5% my backside. These are all lies. This used to be the realm of Pravda and Izvestia. Those of you not old enough to remember, those were the news services of the old Soviet Union. Propaganda spewing nonsense. And this is not political correctness, boys and girls. What this is Orwellian newspeak. Orwellian newspeak. It's called propaganda. It's called lies. And now we get to Hillary and her nonsense about how we are in this basket of deplorables. What's so deplorable? Well, obviously, if you want the border secured, if you want criminal aliens deported, if you want Americans to get their jobs back, you're deplorable. How dare you? How dare you stand for yourself and your fellow American? How dare you stand up and say, hey, you're my government, you're supposed to look out for me. You're my government. You under the Constitution, have an obligation to protect my life and the lives of my kids and my wife and my family. If government serves no other purpose, it's to provide for the safety and security of the nation and its citizens. That's why we have a military. That's why we have police departments. But Hillary says, oh, no, no, not so fast. You're deplorable. You want the immigration laws enforced? You're a hater. There is nothing in the immigration laws that have anything to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. If those laws had that in them, I would never have enforced those laws. It's about keeping out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who are severely mentally ill. Look, let's remember, Ellis Island was a quarantine station run by public health, right, along with immigration. It also includes aliens who are criminals, arsonists, bank robbers, murderers, rapists, gun runners. That's what it's about. Aliens who are spies, aliens who are human rights violators and war criminals, aliens who are terrorists. That's who we're supposed to keep out. And then finally, we get to aliens who would likely become a public charge, or aliens who, if they worked, would place American workers, or at the very least, drive down wages by flooding the labor pool. That's what's in the law. And if you dare stand up and say, enforce that law, you become deplorable. And after all, as we're told by the politicians from both sides of the aisle, we can't deport 11 million. So now we have to figure out what to do with those that are here now, but we'll just keep them from coming in the future. How in the world do you keep them from coming in the future when they're not just running the Mexican border, they're running the Canadian border, they're stowing away on ships, and they're entering the United States through 325 ports of entry, many of them at international airports. And then they're getting lost. It was estimated last year at least 500,000 people who entered through ports of entry vanished. They're here illegally. They're here illegally. So securing the Mexican border, even if we did, you'd still have the aliens flying in. You'd still have the aliens coming by boat. You'd still have the aliens running the Canadian border. But we'll deal with the ones who are here because we can't arrest them all. It's a lie. And when people say, well, what do we do with people that we can't catch? My question is this. What does the police department do with the speeders they don't catch? These laws are no different. What you do is you arrest as many illegal aliens as you can. And yes, you should focus on criminal aliens, but not exclusively. And there's a good reason for that. And I had this discussion with Senator Al D'Amato when he was New York senior senator, because I worked with him off the books, off the record, unofficially, back in the early 80s to create the aggravated felon reentry law that makes it a 20-year maximum felony for an illegal alien who is deported from the United States, has a criminal history, and comes back illegally. Up until then, it was a 2-year maximum punishment, and they did not take criminal histories into account. And I said to D'Amato, 2 years in jail for unlawful reentry for a dishwasher or a farmhand with no criminal history is probably the right sentence. And they very rarely prosecute it because it's such a small sentence. And usually prosecutors will tell you by the time we get done with it, the guy's going to get time served. So they just deported him again. But when you're dealing with people who are violent, with criminals, they get deported, they come back, you want to drop a safe on their head. You want to make it clear, if you dare come back here, we'll come after you, guns blazing, so to speak. Metaphorically, again, I don't want someone misquoting me. But the idea is you're in a world of trouble, as it should be. You deter what you don't want to have happen by enforcement. Deterrence through enforcement works. We do it with drunk driving. We do it with texting. We did it with the seatbelt, click it or ticket, very successful. But immigration is a special case. And then even if you look at the 9/11 Commission report, they said, well, we're going to track foreign students. Track foreign students? 2 years ago, ABC News reported that there was a GAO report that said that at least, you ready for this number, folks? 58,000 foreign students went missing in America. 58,000. Think what 19 terrorists did on 9/11. And the article went on and said that at the hearing they made the point that of the 58,000, 6,000 were of quote-unquote heightened concern, but they didn't explain what heightened concern means. You would have to imagine that these were aliens who perhaps were involved with terrorism or other dangerous activities. 6,000. Poof, missing. Who knows? Who cares? No big deal here. Than what we are doing to national security and public safety. This isn't xenophobia. But for what I just said to you, I am sure that Hillary Clinton would say that I belong in her basket of deplorables. Now, here's something that's interesting. I did my very first congressional hearing, May 20th, 1997, on the issue of visa fraud, immigration benefit fraud, because of two terrorist attacks carried out in the United States in 1993. A Pakistani by the name of Kansi shoots up the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, kills 2 CIA officers, wounds 3 others, and flees. We brought him back, put him on trial, found him guilty. He was executed. The people he killed remain dead. The people he wounded remain injured. 1 month after that shooting incident at CIA headquarters, we had the first bombing at the Trade Center. That bomb killed 6 innocent people, injured over 1,000 people, inflicted a $500 million in damages on that complex. In fact, it was the hotel, I believe it was called the Vista Hotel, damn near collapsed into its own foundation. This was not a firecracker, okay? And in fact, I had friends who worked on the explosion investigation, and I was told by them that engineers they brought in said that if the truck had been parked on the opposite wall, or if it had been filled to the top, because it was not, but if it had been filled to the top with explosives, there was a 50-50 chance that the one tower would have collapsed into the other tower. Could you imagine what the casualty count would have been if one of those towers collided with the other? Those towers stood 1,450 feet tall, a quarter of a mile high, 110 stories. Imagine one slamming into the other. They all would have collapsed. They would have hit other buildings. It would have been cascading dominoes. The seawall that keeps the Hudson River out of lower Manhattan would have been breached. I don't even want to imagine what this would have looked like. This would have been something on the scale of a disaster like you might have seen in Independence Day. You probably would have had hundreds of thousands of fatalities. God knows, maybe lower Manhattan would still be uninhabitable after it got flooded by the Hudson River. I don't even want to imagine. And the Clinton administration did nothing to address those vulnerabilities. Congress passed more laws, and the Clintons didn't do anything about hiring more agents. It goes back to this point that I always make. We'll pass the laws, but we'll make sure we don't have the agents to enforce the law. So the laws are on the books, and we congratulate ourselves for getting tough legislation passed. And the president has a signing ceremony. We're going to protect America. And then we go back to sleep. This is like buying a Ferrari, putting it in your driveway, and leaving the gas tank empty purposely. Can you take me for a ride? No, sorry, the car won't start. It won't start because there's no gas in the tank. We have about 5,000 immigration agents for the entire interior of the United States, and more than half of them are doing customs work. You have 35,000-plus police officers just for the city of New York. Border Patrol has over 20,000 agents. TSA has 45,000 people. ICE has a couple of thousand agents for the whole country. This is a joke, but it's not funny because people are dying. If you want to know if the border is secure, look at the heroin epidemic. Heroin is completely illegal, and America doesn't manufacture a single molecule of heroin. Every single gram of heroin that's in the United States was smuggled. Smuggled across the southern border, smuggled across the northern border, smuggled on ships, smuggled on airplanes, smuggled into the United States. That's the metric for border security. That's how you know how secure the border is, or in this case, is not. And when drugs come into the country, the cartels don't mail it to somebody. They bring their people here. They send their people here because they trust them. And these people that come here have their families back home. So if anybody screws the hierarchy of that drug cartel out of money or drugs or whatever, or doesn't do exactly as he or she is told, believe me, this isn't like dealing with immigration. You know, we'll have a deportation hearing, and it'll be catch and release, and we'll see you in 5 years. You screw the cartels, they kill you. Better yet, to really intimidate people, they'll torture and kill your family. So the people who come here know damn well, they mess with their boss will have their wives, their brothers, their sisters, their parents, whatever, killed. So they toe the line. There's no nonsense here. And it's not just from Latin America. Russian mob, Asian organized crime, the Jamaican drug posses, similar activities coming out of Africa and Europe and the Middle East. How do I know? Well, during my 30-year career with the Immigration Service, I spent half of that career with the Drug Task Force, 4 years with DEA Intelligence, Unified Intelligence, and the rest of that time I was with the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force, where I had desks at the FBI, DEA, ATF, and I worked with other governments of other countries. That's how I know. I saw it every single day. That's what I was working on for nearly half of my career. This isn't rocket science. This isn't hard to understand. Our politicians know this. They don't care. And what's so remarkable is with all the talk about the heroin epidemic, we got to go after the doctors that prescribe the opioids. I agree. They've got to go after the doctors. This nonsense of writing these prescriptions, especially for kids, we're destroying people's lives. But you never hear anything about we've got to stop the flow of narcotics into the United States. You don't see commercials on TV about the dangers of heroin or crack cocaine or methamphetamine the way you do about cigarette smoking or drunk driving. Think about that. Or texting while driving. All these other issues have these really very effective commercials. I can't bear to watch the lung cancer commercials because of cigarettes. My dad died of lung cancer, in part because he worked in the Navy shipyards during the Second World War, and in part because he smoked cigarettes. So I can't bear to watch those commercials, but they are super effective. And if you'll notice, very few people smoke today. When I was a kid, if you walked into a meeting, cigarette smoke everywhere, you'd be coughing your brains out. Not anymore. When was the last time you saw a really effective commercial warning people about heroin? Nobody cares because too much money is being laundered through all of our financial institutions, Wall Street banks and so forth. They don't care. There's no other way of explaining this. And we're told we're going to track foreign students. We don't need to track them. The police don't track bank robbers. They apprehend them and lock them up and put them on trial. Our military doesn't track our nation's enemies. They track them down, they engage them, and they eliminate them. But when it's immigration, go look even at the 9/11 Commission report. We need to track students. My backside you need to arrest students who fail to go to the schools that they were admitted to attend. In March of 2002, just 6 months after 9/11, to everyone's horror, two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta, the ringleader, and a guy by the name of Al-Shehi, were both granted authorization to attend flight school. Now think about that. Marwan Al-Shehi and Mohammed Atta granted permission to go to flight school 6 months after the attack. Well, this doesn't make any sense because both of these guys were terrorists and both of these idiots were dead. Okay? But they got permission to go to flight school. And the indignant Congress held a hearing, and Jackson Lee, Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas, invited me, and I got a letter of invite from Jim Sensenbrenner saying, we need you to come to Washington. And I did. And you can go to the C-SPAN website because that hearing is part of the permanent record, permanent library on C-SPAN. And it's kind of a historic hearing. The hearing room was jammed to the rafters with reporters from all over the world. I never saw so many cameras or telephoto lenses. They were in a feeding frenzy because nobody could believe it. And those members of Congress were pounding the podium and pounding the table in front of them at the dais. This must never happen. We're not going to permit this to happen. This will never, on and on and on. Self-righteous indignation. Not a single promise has been kept. It's over 14 years since that hearing. March of this coming year will be 15 years since that hearing. Watch the hearing. Watch the hearing. You're going to be angry, I promise you. And you should be angry. We should all be pissed over this. Because these are American lives hanging in the balance. If we had acted responsibly, the Boston Marathon would never have happened. The Tsarnaev family claimed political asylum. What does that mean? We have, to use the jargon of the law, we have a credible fear that if we go back to Russia, we face persecution or worse. Okay? We're a compassionate country. We gave them political asylum. What did they do when they got lawful status? They got on airplanes and flew back to Russia. You think maybe they lied? That's called immigration fraud. That's a felony. Didn't stop them, right? They came back. If they had been stopped from coming back, there would have been no Boston attack. Same thing that went on with San Bernardino. That family was involved in marriage fraud. I wrote about it for Front Page Magazine and CapsWeb.org. And in fact, I thought it was going to be the fall edition. It turns out the winter edition of The Social Contract will have a major article that I wrote. And then it will be the subject of a small book that The Social Contract is going to publish. And the article that's going to be in the winter edition, at least tentatively, is being called Immigration Fraud, The Lies That Kill. And that's what the 9/11 Commission warned about. They didn't warn about the Mexican border. Does that mean we shouldn't secure the Mexican border? No, we have to. But look at the lies and look at what Hillary has to say. This basket of deplorables who unbelievably want our borders secured, want our laws enforced. And by the way, if Hillary gets her way, all of the kids of the people she would legalize, all the minors, would be immediately entitled, absolutely entitled to come to America and go to American schools. So run the numbers, folks. If you're looking at 30 million aliens, and only 1 in 3 has kids back home, we're looking at 10 million. And generally, people from third world countries have lots of kids. Average family, maybe 5 or 6 kids. Let's cut the number in half. 10 million have 3 kids, 30 million. So let's cut that by a third, so we're down to 10 million. I mean, and I'm being a wild-eyed, crazy optimist here. What would happen if within a year or two, 10 million more foreign students who couldn't speak English suddenly came to America and were immediately enrolled in schools across the country? It's not one state or two states. All 50 states would take the brunt of this thing. Our schools are going broke right now. There's dwindling taxes coming in because the economy is still in the tank. And we wouldn't know if these kids were involved with MS-13. There was a hearing in April about criminal aliens. They brought in a sheriff before the House Immigration Subcommittee, and the sheriff in Maryland, see, another border state, folks, Maryland, said that since 2013, when these unaccompanied minors started flooding across the border, 60-odd percent of the calls that he's gotten from the schools within his jurisdiction about violence in the school involved one of those kids or more than one of those kids who came across the border with that so-called surge. Does that mean that every kid that came here is a gang member? Absolutely not. But how many gang members do you need to admit into a school before kids get killed? We just had a terrible double homicide out here on Long Island 2 days ago. Two young girls, 16 years old, and it's believed they were killed by MS-13 gang members. And at least one of the girls has a Latino last name. Now, what does that mean? The people at greatest risk are the transnational criminals or the members of the ethnic immigrant communities. What's really racist is when a politician talks about the Latino voter and says, well, I know you folks want the border secured, but we have to take care of our Latino friends. So what they want is our borders should be open and we should be legalizing everyone, so then they'll vote for us, so we have to deal with that. I can tell you that I've spoken to many Americans who are Latino. They don't believe that at all. And what this does is create friction between Americans and members of the Latino community. When you attribute to any ethnic group block think, if you're a Latino, this is your issue. If you're a black, this is your issue. If you're a Jew, this is your... That's bigotry, it's profiling, it's racism, it's discrimination. There are Latinos who may want amnesty, and they need to be talked to about how wrong they are. And there are many Latinos who say no. The same about whites and blacks and purples and greens and polka dots. People are people. And when you point that finger and say, well, we want to appeal to the Latino voter, you are creating a monolithic group based on race, and by definition, that is the true racist. If anybody, and I mean anybody, belongs in a basket of deplorables, it's Hillary Clinton. And you know, after that attack, that bombing that took place at the Trade Center, I testified in 97 about visa fraud, immigration fraud, because that's how these guys got into the country. But what you may not know is that 2 days short of the fifth anniversary of that attack, this would have been February 24th, 1998, the Senate Judiciary Committee, Subcommittee on Terrorism, held a hearing. And it was about foreign terrorists operating in the United States. And one of the members of the Senate said that given everything that we now know, maybe we should rethink the idea of giving visas to citizens who come from countries that sponsor terrorism. Sounds very much like what Donald Trump just said and got beat up over. Guess which right-wing lunatic senator might have said that? It was actually a Democrat by the name of Dianne Feinstein. And she also challenged the wisdom of providing training to people from those countries who were studying nuclear engineering and biochemistry, because she said, we're teaching potential enemies how to kill us. Why are we doing this? And nobody said to her, you're a hater, you're a xenophobe. But as soon as Donald Trump said, let's keep people out of the United States who might do this to us, think of the screaming that went on. Jimmy Carter barred Iranians from entering the United States. I was part of a team of agents who were assigned to go out and look for Iranians after our embassy was overrun. And Jimmy Carter is a train wreck. And next week, I'm going to tell you a story about Jimmy Carter that you probably won't believe. I wrote an article. I submitted it to Front Page Magazine. I hope they have it posted within the next couple days. And you'll see how all of this devolved from Mr. Carter. Mr. Carter, indeed. So understand that all the screaming and all the yelling about what Donald Trump had to say about keeping out terrorists was actually put into force by Jimmy Carter and recommended by none other than Dianne Feinstein back in 1998, 18 years ago. How unbelievable is that? I have to tell you, I'm so happy that you have decided to visit with me today, listen to my program. I hope you find the information helpful. And if you did, please share it with your friends, your neighbors, and everyone you can, and be part of my Bucket Brigade of Truth. And please remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. Get involved and keep your eye on the state, on the House and Senate races, and on your local political races as well. We have got to get representation on all levels of government. And if politicians don't want to represent us, we need to tell them you're fired. Have a great weekend, everybody. I look forward to seeing you again, same time, same place, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. So long for now.